Hale Varsity Magazine presents the Hale Varsity Radio Show, the authority on all things Huskers. Spanning across the state, no one else talks Huskers like Hale Varsity.
Day by day,
day by day,
we get better and better.
We get better and better.
We get beat,
beat.
We get beat,
beat. Hale Varsity Radio Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt and former Blackshirt Jay Moore.
Great to have you in on a Friday. Hale Varsity Radio, Hale Varsity Magazine, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, TJ Henney, and you hope you're doing okay. Busy one as we get you ready for football. Padded football practice tomorrow. They had it yesterday for Nebraska, but the word scrimmage leaking out. I can't wait to do that. Not scrimmage. I've lost that speed and agility. But we'll spend some time. Thoughts from Nick Gates. He caught up with Aaron Sorensen of Hale Varsity. Thoughts on the Final Four from a man who's covered college basketball a ton. Bill Dolman, NBC Sports. And then legendary coach Tom Penders will be with us in hour two. Husker baseball gets ready to pound Indiana. You hope, if you're a Nebraska baseball fan, 1-3 tonight in Bloomington. Husker first baseman, the pride of Des Moines. Ben Miller going to be with us. Klausburn and Brandon Vogel before we say goodbye with the Friday forecast. Let's talk about the term fighting words. TJ, if I said, look, your hair's nice, but maybe try it a different way. Would you take offense to that?
No, I would.
Okay.
Suggestions. That'd be like a critique because you're the hair guy. You'd be like, hey, here's what you need to do.
So, like, it depends on the source.
I'm still getting used to this.
Right. And I want to spend a moment on fighting words. Them's fighting words, right? Well, first we'll start locally here with Nick Gates. Nick Gates had a thought about some of those young pups. Mike Babcock asked him after practice. Those young pups, Bo Wilson, Reardon, Farniak, what are they? Can you describe them to me? Because people want to know. Those guys are going to provide depth, maybe win a starting spot, who knows? But fighting words, would you take offense to this?
Do they have that kind of edge?
Yeah, they do. Oh, yeah, they're kind of... What you call a D word? I don't really want to say it, but they got a little D word in them, so.
Fighting words. So if you're on a football field and you're a sloppy in a good way, heavy, athletic offensive lineman, and Nick Gates, tough dude, kind of the leader of your crew, says you're a D word.
They got a little D word in them, so.
Okay. That's not fighting words. Now, if you call a defensive lineman that in tomorrow's scrimmage,
yeah,
it may be on.
Yeah.
Depending on how sensitive the defensive lineman is.
Yeah, this is more of a compliment for sure.
This is a compliment. Right? Now, there's certain places in the world that is seen as a compliment. If you're on Wall Street or on an offensive line.
Yeah.
That's
in a football locker room.
In a football locker room. So, I feel all right about that.
Yeah, I do too.
Fighting words. The D word?
They got a little D word in them, so.
Nick Gates says that about the young redshirt freshman.
Yeah, you need a little snarl out of those guys.
The edge, right? Now, the other example of fighting words, new Gophers coach, P.J. Fleck. Yeah.
Row the boat.
Yeah, the Big Ten Network interviewing Fleck. And the word rebuilding used. Jerry Kill's fired up. Jerry Kill's back in the Big Ten. Jerry Kill's the offensive coordinator at Rutgers. Fighting words? Rebuilding? Not always. Unless you're P.J. Fleck and you use the term rebuilding Minnesota football, know your meaning. Jerry Kill, I'm not crazy about him saying they have to rebuild the program. We went in there and said a lot of the same things when we took over for Tim Brewster. But that's not the case now. The new AD has no idea what he inherited. No idea what we inherited. Joe Mattery does. Call him. We inherited a mess. Fleck has walked into a gold mine.
Wow, a gold mine.
I would listen.
I mean, it's in a lot better shape, and I get why he's salty, but I don't know about a gold mine.
I would say them's fighting words.
Oh, for sure.
Well, I'm rebuilding the program. Shut up, Fleck. I love your energy.
I mean, I can get why he wants to say that. Give him some more extra time.
You just went 9-4 with a threatened player walkout in the Holiday Bowl. Against a good Washington State team. Biased, yes. But come on. Seriously. Just different terminology, whether or not it's fighting words. If I'm Jerry Kill and I'm PJ Fleck, I make sure we don't see each other at Big Ten Media Days.
For sure.
And listen,
did Jerry need to really comment on that? Just like, let it, you're with Rutgers, let it go.
He was asked by Tom Dino.
Yeah.
So, no, if I'm Kill, that's my baby. I made that a very good job. I made that an incredible career achievement with top 40, you know, maybe your recruiting class is ranked 45th. I did at Minnesota what I did at Northern Illinois, except I did it in the Big Ten, and I'm the only program to be within a touchdown to 10 points of of Wisconsin and Ohio State. I would argue, over the last 3 years, Minnesota's the toughest football team. You poll teams, not ask about talent. You want to talk just straight-up barroom tough. I bet you Minnesota'd finish in that top two, probably right behind Ohio State. Right there with Wisconsin. So I get Coach Kill.
I don't know, unless he's a gopher lifer, it just doesn't strike me that he'd be so concerned about it. But that's just my opinion.
No, listen, he had health issues, obviously, had to resign, something's fishy with the health concerns, not fishy, but him all of a sudden ending up at Kansas State to help Coach Snyder down there when he needed rest and health. That's how it was deemed. So he didn't last long at Minnesota as like an administrative assistant.
Yeah.
He was probably driving him nuts.
Yeah.
And the way I look and read into it, he probably was, it was suggested, like, we got to have you go do something else because of your health. But it probably drove him nuts.
And he's probably upset, too, how they treated his guy, Clays.
Right, Clays. Right?
Yeah. I think that's a big part of it, too.
That's it. There's something stuck in his craw with that, and there should be because Clays did a really good job. He fumbled some things towards the end of games in his short tenure. But long and short of it is he's one of Jerry's loyal soldiers, and he did well. Now, I get where he's coming from. But just a little difference here. The term rebuilding is let's drop the gloves. Jerry Kill, PJ Fleck. But you call somebody a D word, a teammate.
They got a little D word in them, so.
It's a sign of endearment. And context is king.
Oh, yeah.
Always. Let's talk a little bit about spring practice. Nick Gates, more from Nick Gates, right, other than just what he thinks of some of those young pup offensive linemen in a good way. If there is such a. That guy's a. Yeah, he's a sales guy. That's all. You know what I'm saying? It's a term of endearment. Nick Gates, though, spent some time talking about a couple of things. One, just the bonding that's gone on. Has some thoughts on Tommy Armstrong and the quarterback situation. We'll get there. But Gates asked about the learning experience from the bowl game. A lot's been made out about Barnett, what he did to Gates. Gates has taken some time to come to grips with it. As good as Gates has been, as young as he's been, it's the first real time he got worked. You're not going to win every snap, but Gates wins most snaps. He didn't that bowl game, and he was asked about it.
Yeah, I mean, that definitely taught me a lesson. I think I need that lesson to be taught, too. So I think it was good for me in the end. You know, the game wasn't too fun to watch or, you know, look at after. But, I mean, I definitely thought it helped out a lot.
That's maturity, man.
That is.
I mean, that is straight up maturity. And if you're a Nebraska football fan, and I'm going to go molehill to mountain on this, just what I'm hearing for a second. You got a guy that's going into his junior year, a guy that in bowl practice said, we're going to change some things, and it's going to be about attitude, and I'm going to kind of, in you know, lasso that leadership role. Great. Talk. Now go act. And you say those things, and then you go have the bowl game you had against a talent like Barnett. For Gates to talk about it like he did after practice, God, that's so mature. Think about failing. Whatever you failed in life, because mm-hmm. we all do. Think about having to answer for it in that moment that, God, as painful as it is, you got to kind of look yourself in the mirror, talk to a loved one, or whatever the case may be, and own it. Owning it's the hardest part, not just in football, but in life, when you screw up. But when you screw up, a lot of times, man, it makes you better. And for him to kind of say that on the record, we'll have more from Gates here in a second. That's such a great sign from an attitude and a mindset of this football team, even though it's spring football. I'm making a big deal about this, but it shows leadership to
me. Yeah, I love his honesty about this, because at the time, obviously, it wasn't great, but then he's got to realize, hey, like, there's different levels to this. There are guys who are a lot better.
If I'm
going
to talk it, I got
to
walk it.
Yeah, and if I do want to get to the next level, I got to be just as good as this guy who's kicking my ass right now. And now I got to get there.
Barnett is called every Sunday.
Yeah.
That's what you're going to see. Searle's hit on it. When we talked to him down at Yowie's a couple weeks ago when he sat in.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and that's so it's what it is. You're going to take your lumps.
Yeah.
And at times you're going to block that guy. I mean, Von Miller gets blocked sometimes on 3rd and 9. He doesn't get home. That's a win for a tackle. Sometimes you're going to get beat at the tackle spot, and it isn't fun. More from Gates. Spent some time on the bowl game film. That probably was not something he watched with many.
Yeah, they're deaf. I didn't watch it for about 2-3 weeks after, so I need to compose myself and, you know, get my head on straight before I watch it. So there's definitely a little bit I didn't watch it. You know, I kind of gave up on myself, you know, a little bit through there. And, you know, I just got to keep going and playing hard. So that's probably the big thing. So
facing the music, losing confidence. I mean, man, those are two tough pills to swallow.
Mm-hmm.
Again, doing the accountability thing and then trying to learn from it. And then the confidence thing. That's so, so important. And listen, you got a team full of dudes that are talented. They are working hard to be as good as they can be because they want to win. Same with the staff. But there is a fine line of confidence. And it is so, so important to become mentally tough, no matter what shortcomings you have. And that only comes through experience and the tough days, the bad days you have, choosing to learn from them versus let it define you and just doubt yourself. Yeah, confidence is such an important thing. More credit to Barnett, as that was a topic yesterday with Gates as he spoke after practice.
Definitely, he beat me, so he got me, hands down, easy. He was, I mean, Randy was pretty close, but other than that, he was thick, he was fast, he was a big dude. He's a good player, really good player. So hats off to him. He beat me, he got me on that one. So
again, more maturity here, saying, yeah, that guy got me. Gates is the type of dude that, I mean, he got into it a lot. He's got that nasty you want, but he's also, to me, the type of guy before yesterday or before some things this spring that would be, and this isn't nice to say, but the attitude or mindset that may not give credit because it hadn't happened to him. I mean, I remember him going against Shalik Calhoun. Guy did great. That was his freshman year. And so it was kind of a fast path to deserved accolade. You have a game like you did against Michigan State where Shalique Calhoun doesn't own you.
Yeah.
Your first kind of big rodeo. Hey, man, fast track to being awesome.
Yeah. And all that success early might get you thinking your ego a little bit.
Right,
and
you're going to blow your head. Your head's going
to
blow off.
So then it's good to have an embarrassment a little bit to get to notch your ego or pegs or whatever a little down.
Come to Jesus.
Get ready to go to work.
Or pray to him.
And it sounds like he's ready to get to work.
On 3rd and 9 when Barnett's coming after your quarterback. So, yeah. And then the other part of this, the response with Gates, is all of these lessons and trials and failures, really. Not that there's plural, but that game, those snaps can really be applied to his leadership role, his ability, and what type of, well, how wise he will be as a leader on this football team. And it's going to be important with other guys on that line that have also struggled, not only to support them, but pick them up. You want a key 2017 season, it's going to be that O-line. Recognizing moments by Gates is so, so important. Bill Dolman's next.
Subscribe to Hail Varsity Magazine. Call 1-855-3-HUSKER or go to HailVarsity.com/subscribe.
That's amazing! That's amazing! That's amazing! That's amazing!
Now, back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
Jay Bird is going to be off to Augusta National. He is on assignment, his own assignment. He'll be down at the Masters. They don't allow your phones there, so we'll have to take his word for it. I believe him, though. He's such a golf nut, so good for him. Bird will be back in the near future. We will be at Yowie's tomorrow getting you ready for the Final Four. 3 to 6 tomorrow afternoon. Come see us. 8th and Q in the Haymarket. Still a chance for you to get qualified for those grand prizes that include a 55-inch LG Smart TV, barbecue for a year, Oklahoma Joe's. You can sign up for that. All sorts of other goodies. And, of course, that'll be given away Monday. National Championship Night down at Yowie's. March to Prize Madness invites you down. We'll be down there 3 to 6 Monday, getting you ready with a live rendition of Hail Varsity. We are efforting the Pride of Fairbury, Bill Dolman, the other Pride of Fairbury, Dana Altman, Pride of Wilbur first. But Dana is getting ready for a chance to get to the National Championship game against Roy. Many of our Hail Varsity affiliates will have the Final Four coverage starting for you at 5 o'clock, so stay tuned for that. We'll try and catch up with Bill Dolman before the hour is done. Don't forget, 35 minutes away, Tom Penders took 5 different programs to the NCAA tournament, found his way to the Elite Eight, almost to Final Four. Coach Penders will give us his thoughts on the Nebraska basketball job / recruiting, his take on Dana. They have a lot of history together. So that coming up, Ben Miller, Husker Baseball, also joins us in hour two. You can join us, 466-3776, 466-3776, 800-825-5865. Let's get you some updates here with Danny Langsdorf as he talked practice yesterday. I'll be anxious to see tomorrow's scrimmage and how, with pads on, the team does offensively against this defense, how the defense communicates and covers, and two, how really well the offensive line, we just spent time talking Nick Gates, how's the offensive doing the run game? How's the offensive line going to do in the run game, and how are the backs looking? And you're still thinking quarterbacks, and here is Coach Langsdorf. As he was asked after practice, he spoke to the media yesterday, you know, what makes him the most happy right now with his quarterbacks? I mean, if there's 50 different things Coach Langsdorf's watching with his quarterbacks, a lot of times it's just shells or just shorts because of the limited amount of contact. So your evaluation really is complete and enhanced when there is contact and it's live football, but there's a lot of other things you can get done. But what's he smiling about right now with with all of his quarterbacks?
I think checking the ball down has been really good. A third down period today where they've got a lot of people in coverage and it's maybe a three-man rush and the ball's getting out of their hands into a back, and we're running for a first down or you know, at least getting a completion to be able to have a chance to do it rather than trying to throw it into coverage or interceptions. So I think they're doing a nice job of utilizing those check downs. And with that, the completion percentage gets higher, and the backs catch more balls.
I got to ask the question. Are you team check down? Ask yourself, Nebraska football fan. Are you okay with the check down? Let us go through the history of the check down. Amir Abdullah against whoever the heck it was. The Division I AA team where he saved Nebraska.
McNeese State.
That was check down. Amir Abdullah v. Northwestern to set up the Hail Mary. Ron checked down to Amir.
Mm-hmm.
Amir said, I will not be denied the first down marker. That was team check down. Marlon Lucky
torching, was Mr. Check down.
Torching Texas on the road in 07. Don't ask me how the fourth quarter rush defense did. But for the long time, Texas was all over the map trying to figure out how to cover.
Mm-hmm.
There's Marlon, 9 catches that day. Check down, check down, check down. Well, we got to come up and play the back. There's old Todd Peterson in the end zone as you're just beating the crap out of Texas until your run D got smoked. So team check down. And listen, Rex Burkhead, Ohio State, game winner. Taylor checked it down. There's been some great moments in Nebraska check down history.
There have been.
Okay. There's been some great check down moments.
Mm-hmm.
But too many times, listen, if you're not team check down, I understand it too, because immediately it makes you think conservatism. Well, they're afraid. They're not gonna, that's not it at all. There's safe football,
mm-hmm.
and then there is,
and to me, check down is
there's, and then it's not even aggressive. It's not aggressive football. It is risky football. If you try and you've seen two instances where either you don't check it down at all and everything's got to be a 30-yard touchdown pass, or you've seen conservative football, which isn't bad football, where you're just moving the chains,
yeah,
as long as the guys catch it, where you're just checking it down and you're getting 4 a pop. Ideally, Langsdorf will give you the happy medium with who's ever taken the snaps. So the check down thing, for him to say that, I think it's something he's been wanting to scream from the rooftops for a year.
Well, yeah.
For 2 years.
I mean, you've had so many yellow bombs.
Take what it can give you. But here's the thing. Those yellow bombs either kept you in games or won you games.
Or picks.
Well, there were some... There were some
picks. The thing, yeah, I like most about the check down is if it's a real check down, the quarterback's going through all his progressions, and his final one's the running back, his escape valve. So that means at least the quarterback
has time,
and he's working. Okay, and that guy's not open. All right, let's give it to the running back. Check down. So I am team check down.
I am too. And you know what? The more times you can get Trey scored a touchdown,
yeah,
the go-ahead touchdown
get
against
that guy the ball.
Against Minnesota, mm-hmm, on a check down. Huh? Look at me in my check down memory bank. The more you can just get yards, I'm gold with.
Yeah.
And it's a completion, and it's going to screw up a defense where they're going to have to overcommit. How many times did you die in bowl games as a Nebraska fan where you had a linebacker, pick the 80s as an example of a decade, where you had a linebacker trying to cover a running back? How many times did Miami and Florida State wear you out with that matchup? It's not the linebacker's fault. Sorry, Org Dunn's really not an option to cover the linebacker, but he had to. Hmm. You asked him to, pre-Ed Stewart. Okay? I mean, this could turn it around where you're working somebody else. And honestly, they can't be as aggressive Somebody's got to be in coverage and have an assignment. I think of this case in point. What's Wisconsin do? They make you drink with their linebackers.
Mm-hmm.
They do. Well, they can't come at you free all the time now, can they, if you've got a back and a quarterback in time to check down? It's all right. Let's get a little further description and analysis from Danny when it comes to the big play versus the safe play.
There's a fine line there between
yes.
just getting back there and checking it down and turning down an open throw down the field, for sure. But in our, you know, kind of in my history, the ones that do a nice job of looking at downfield and then getting into that check down has been really good. It's been good, tough on the coverage. You know, they've got everything covered downfield, and you get the first down. You utilize the back more. I think that brings those linebackers tighter so you can throw it downfield later. You know, so I think it works hand in hand, but it is a fine line between, you know, being too quick and being too late.
He laid it out perfectly. That's why Danny's a highly paid offensive coordinator that grooms guys to go through the football on Sundays in the offense. I mean, this is a perk of the offense. There's always somebody open. You're going to have options. You're going to move the chains. And if your run game needs any help, it's that threat of balance. You're going to be able to run the football because they're not going to load up on you. Presumably you got a back and another line that can help each other. And the threat of the pass can maybe open up the run. I have not decided yet which way it's going to go. Talk to me in August. We'll get to the schedules here that are coming out for the Big Ten non-con next segment. I just know that you find the back downfield. You find the back as a check down. Just get me 7 yards on first down. Get me 5 yards on first down. Make second and third very doable.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not three and out. The defense is on the field. Let's talk running backs. Cut 10 as a little bit more clarity as we're winding closer to spring football. April 15th in the spring game. Your final hello, goodbye for football till August. But Wilbon, how's he doing? How's Trey doing? Here is Danny Langsdorf.
I like what Trey Bryant's done. I think he's had, you know, a good 8 practices. I think Mikael Wilbon has shown some improvement running the ball, pass protection. You know, and I think Devine, I think he's been a little banged up here and there, so we haven't gotten as much work from him. But I think that group is good. We're trying to get Austin Rose and Wyatt Mazur in the mix and see how those two can respond and play and factor in on offense and special teams, and so it's a deep group, and we've got to kind of clean it down and get the guys playing that are going to travel and be on our squad.
Good news for Bryant. They love him. Great. That means he's doing all the things he needs to do to not be a liability or a tell. Wilbon, we'll hear about in a minute. Lastly, I don't like the news on Ziggy. Because, I mean, Ziggy's in a dogfight for snaps and for reps. And the injury, he didn't get specific, isn't good. I know Ziggy's worked his butt off to get leaner and in more, you know, just I'm a rock type shape. He looked great pre-spring press conference when we did the interview with him. So him missing time isn't good. That's got to be frustrating for him. But he's a proven and important option. Do we have time to take the calls? No. Have our friends hang on the line. You can join
us.
Oh.
We're going to get Bill next segment.
Really? Bill Dolman, the pride of Fairbury, will be with us.
Mm-hmm.
Bill remembered the hotline, 466-3776, 466-3776, 1-800-825-5865. Bill Dolman, next on Hail Varsity Radio.
Want to be heard?
We know he's not. Let him finish.
Call 402-466-ESPN or text HAIL to 88474 with your message. Chat with us on Twitter at @Schmidt_radio and JMore44 and TJ_Henning.
Who wants to have some fun?
Now it's back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
Back with you, Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine. Jay Moore is on his way to Augusta. Tom Pender's soon to talk Final Four. Legendary coach at Texas Husker first baseman Ben Miller. Next hour in front of Indiana, Nebraska to get Big Ten play started. The Pride of Fairbury. And with NBC Sports, Bill Dolman with this. Do we have the theme? Oh, we have the theme music. And he is back with us at Bill Dolman on Twitter. Billy D, how are you, man?
First time listener, long time caller.
I know it. How are you? What's good this weekend?
Oh, I mean, it goes without saying, it's the start of the World Curling Championships in Edmonton, Canada, beginning Saturday. And since there's nothing going on in the sports world, I certainly invite everybody on Saturday night to attend to the U.S.-Switzerland matchup. There's nothing quite like the renewal of that rivalry.
They, you know what? We hate Switzerland, don't we?
Why not? Yeah. Somebody's got to.
Right. They're just kind of passive. Okay. Listen, I want to ask you here. You've read the news. You've seen the news. You know Coach Miles from Mountain West time. And reaction. Ed Morrow says, see ya. And he's not only high profile, but he's high production when healthy.
Well, I am not going to say... think that this is a one-way street, that there's a problem with Tim Miles. There's got to be something that's two-way here. You know, I think the chatter about what's wrong with Tim Miles is probably a little too loud.
Okay.
And I'm not pointing a finger at Ed Morrow that he did something untoward. But realistically, where is his basketball future? Because what I've kind of read, it seems like, well, I'm not happy with my role, and I don't want to play inside. And I'm thinking, I've not seen a ton of Nebraska basketball, but I've seen enough to know that him thinking that his role is going to be something like, well, I should have been Andrew White after he left. I just don't think that's, you know, I don't think that's in the cards for him. And, you know, everybody talks about, well, I got to do what's best for my basketball future. Well, for 99.5% of the guys playing college basketball, your basketball future is going to be another couple of years, and that's it. Now, you might get to play overseas, and he may. But if he thinks he's going to be some type of, you know, high-scoring offensive weapon on the wing, I just don't see that at all. Is he going to be a dominant post player? Probably not. But can he be an effective post player, especially now that he's got a couple of years and some experience? Yeah, so it's a loss for Nebraska. There's no question about it. Is it troubling that guys leave the program? Well, yeah. But from what I read for the first two guys, it was really not that big a deal, and they're going to get playing time elsewhere. I'm looking also at, I think ESPN ran a list a couple of days ago, and I think people think that this transfer thing is something that is just, you know, an ill that's affecting Nebraska. There's like 750 college transfers, I think, at the Division I level. There's 350 schools.
Yep.
So there's two, on average, two per school of guys, I'm just not happy here. I'm going to go elsewhere. You know, this is a symptom of college basketball. Guys think that their stock is not going to rise where they are, so they got to go elsewhere. I think this is a two-way street, and I think coaches are to blame. I think players are to blame. The coddling of the athlete, thinking they're going to be something special and all go to the league, that's to blame. It's unfortunate that guys can't stick around for 2 years anyway, 3 years, 4 years, and, you know, and stay true to their commitment. But it's a bad PR thing. There's no question about that. But there's a lot more at play than, you know, Tim Riles is, you know, guys can't play for him. I just don't think guys can play anywhere anymore.
Bill, got about 3 minutes here. Your take on the Final Four. What coach would you like to see win it Monday night? I mean, I know you know Dana. I know you know Roy. I think you've worked some of Few's games. And then Frank Martin. I mean, you were doing hoops when he was down at K-State. So, I mean, you've had contact with all four guys.
When is the Final Four? The curling championships are this weekend. Don't you know that?
I know. Okay. After the curling championships.
Okay, let's say whenever the Final Four happens to be. Well, you can't go against or even bet against, I don't think, Dana Altman. I mean, the hometown guy. What he's done, I don't think people really can appreciate what he's done to get to the Final Four. They lost one of their better players
yes.
in the Pac-12 tournament. His name escapes me, but the young shot blocker.
Boucher.
Yeah, and so to lose him, now remember when Cincinnati lost Kenyon Martin, 15 years ago?
Was it
that he was number one? He blows out his ankle and he's out, and Cincinnati was not the same. Not to say that Boucher is that kind of player, but you lose a starter and a key player and one of your best defensive players on the eve of the NCAA tournament, and you get to the Final Four and you smoke Kansas in doing so on its home floor? I think it's a remarkable job that Dana Altman has done to get them where they are, and I think they're playing with a ton of confidence. They're experienced. I don't see any reason why they can't win it. I wish they were going against North Carolina in the championship game.
Right.
I'm not a big Roy Williams fan. They're certainly motivated because of what happened last year. Frank Martin's story is remarkable, and I'm glad it's being told. But I'll tell you this. I have never been around a harder-edged guy, if you will, in mm-hmm. practice when the mics aren't on than listening to Frank Martin. And that was when he was an assistant. Everybody thought Bob Huggins was this badass. I'm like, who's that guy?
Who's this hitman?
But clearly he can motivate guys, and he's done a tremendous job. I think he's a guy you root for. Everybody roots for Gonzaga, you know, the little guy. But I join, I think, all Nebraskans. That, you know, you hope the best for Dane Altman, and I don't think there's any reason why he can't get it done. If they beat the winner of the Carolina-Oregon game, that's who's going to win it.
And you'll see that after curling with NBC Sports' Bill Dolman. Bill, we are about out of time, and I wanted to Nebraska's going to scrimmage tomorrow. They are talking about the check down to the running back. Are you team check down about 40 seconds?
I just hope the Huskers win. That's all I really care about. And if we're checking down to the running back on third down and eight, I'm not in favor of it.
We're talking more about...
If we're going to run a fullback trap on third down and eight, go Big Red.
How about checking down to the fullback? Huh?
Fine with me. Get the ball in the hands of Mekavica, and we're good.
No, let's see. Mika, you know, Joel could still play, I think.
Probably.
All right. Bill Dolman, the pride of Fairbury, NBC Sports, at Bill Dolman on Twitter. Billy D, have a great weekend. Have a great call with curling U.S. versus Switzerland.
And remember, it's only a game, okay, people? It's only a curling game. So easy.
Bill,
no John Higgins stuff going on in curling, okay?
No, thank you.
Easy. It's only a game.
Bill, you be awesome, man. Thank you.
Bye.
Take care. There he is, Bill Dolman, the pride of Fairbury. He doesn't like the check down on third and eight. I wasn't hoping for the check down on third and eight. We'll wind down hour one. Tom Pender's coming up, and Husker first baseman Ben Miller also on the way.
Welcome back to the Hail Varsity Radio Show. Here's Chris and Jay.
Winding down hour one. Tom Pender's coming up. Legendary Texas coach, Hall of Famer. His thoughts on the Final Four, thanks to Bill Dolman and Ben Miller. Husker first baseman coming up. Drunk driving, a word on that and a warning to you if you're out with friends or family and you have too many and you refuse that ride home. It's not great. Think again. Mixing alcohol and driving, never a good thing. Can take a life, can lose yours, can be arrested, can go to jail, can lose your license, can pay fines and legal fees any way you look at it. You drink, you drive, you lose. A message from the Nebraska Department of Roads and Highway Safety Office. Okay, so we'll have the Friday forecast in less than an hour. Klausburn will be in. Brandon Vogel will be in with his picks. TJ is needing Gonzaga.
Mm-hmm.
Do you need them just beyond Saturday, or am I doing steak and beer payment to you no matter what? I have
probably no
I
matter
have failed.
Probably no matter what. I need them. I need them to at least win Saturday. Maybe not the whole thing, but I definitely need Saturday.
Go, because listen, if I see Frank Martin v. Dana Altman. I'm okay with Monday night that way.
If I'm ranking the possible matchups, I think that's my fourth.
It's your last.
I want to see Gonzaga, Oregon.
You think it'd be a bad game?
No, I just, out of the possibilities, that'd be my fourth option.
Gonzaga, Oregon would be the two best teams to give you the best matchup. You're off South Carolina's bandwagon.
Yeah, I mean, I like Frank Martin and I like Sindarius Thornwell, but I'd rather see the Zags and their story and go against Oregon and their small ball, or I'd rather see David Goliath, Gonzaga versus North Carolina, you know, small team versus the Blue Bloods. So those kind of be my two matchups that I'd like to see the most.
Okay. I can't, and I know there's a lot of Carolina fans out there. I like Carolina. I'm just not a Roy guy. I mean, Roy's, I don't know how sincere he is. That's my point. And I don't know how huge a fan Coach Penders is. Well, we won't, like, point blank ask him, is Roy full of it? We won't ask him that.
Mm-hmm.
He might give it to you anyway. And then there's Bill Dolman. And that comes from years of, you know, doing Big 8 basketball.
Yeah.
And Big 12 basketball, where Roy's kind of just like, eh, you're not a national TV guy. Can't talk to you.
Yeah. I felt like, remember when I was a kid watching one of his final interviews at Kansas, and it was just like really uncomfortable to watch.
Was this the one after the Syracuse loss?
I think it might have been, yeah.
Where was it, poor Bonnie?
Yes.
Bonnie Bernstein.
Yes.
I was in a ballroom in South Dakota watching that thing. Because that KU team was supposed to be the next greatest. Because you had Bochy, was their little bald-headed point guard for Kansas.
Okay, I was thinking maybe it was a Collison and...
That was 97.
Okay.
With Collison and LaFrentz and Heinrich.
Heinrich, yeah, okay.
Yeah, that 97 team lost to Arizona. That team was nuts.
Yeah.
They waited in line forever to get into the Nebraska student section. I held spots for people. First play of the game, back pick, Rafe, dunk. We're done. Okay, Tom Penders up next. Hail Varsity continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Hail Varsity Magazine presents the Hail Varsity Radio Show, the authority on all things Huskers. Spanning across the state, no one else talks Huskers like Hail Varsity.
Day by day,
day by day,
we get better and better.
We get better and better.
We
get
big.
Varsity Radio Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt and former Blackshirt Jay Moore.
Back at it, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Final Four weekend down in the desert. And a Hall of Fame coach and award-winning author, dead coach walking, Tom Penders with us, at Tom Penders on Twitter. An Elite Eight run with Texas. Five other programs to the NCAA tournament. This is a special time. Coach Penders, great to talk to you again. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Chris. It's a great time, beautiful weather, and a lot of excitement in the air.
There is. Now, as you kind of step back, we have the Final Four set up. How's this tournament energized you? What have you thought about this March of 2017 when you think about this tournament in comparison to others?
Well, I guess, you know, the one thing that runs throughout this tournament is that the one-and-dones are not here.
Yeah.
You know, Oregon's a veteran team, and their center's 25 years old and a sixth year. Ennis, who transferred from Villanova, all veterans. Even North Carolina, who annually seems to have, you know, two or three guys that are going to come out or could come out. You know, you've got balance, you've got veterans, you've got a surprise, in my opinion. You know, Frank Martin has been an outstanding coach wherever he's been, at Kansas State and now South Carolina. You know, building two programs or being involved in the building of two major programs. He was with Bob Huggins there in Oregon. one of the most underrated coaches in NCAA history is Dana Altman. The coaches respect him. Anybody who's coached against him, he exploits your weaknesses, and he makes you, on the other hand, you know, stop his big guns, and he has a balance of big guns. They're the most, you know, explosive offensive team outside of Carolina in this tournament. Gonzaga is a team where you have to look at their year-long stats, and, you know, they don't play in a strong conference, and nobody really wants to play them. So their stat sheet, you kind of throw it out. You have to look and watch them. And throughout the tournament, they found different ways to win games in different situations. And, of course, Mark Few is another guy who coaches think and know is an outstanding coach. But, you know, he's not the, you know, the cover boy coach that maybe Roy Williams and some of the other favorites like John Calipari. And Cal's convinced the NCAA put him in a bracket with North Carolina to keep him out of here.
he was interesting after the game last Sunday. He gave credit, but it was a little backhanded, specifically with how the game was called and the region he had to come through, wasn't it?
Yeah, the region he had to come through. I think they're going to go back to making it more balanced. You know, no team should have to go against an entire, you know, 18,000 or 25,000 people. You know, it takes the balance out of a tournament or the fairness out of it. You know, Xavier had to do that in their division. I mean, they almost made it to the Final Four. I think they were totally worn out when Gonzaga won it, but, you know, they had some incredible wins in the tournament, including the favorite in many people's eyes, including mine. Mm-hmm. I don't have anybody here in the Final Four that I picked.
Me neither.
But I don't think I'd run into a coach who has either. So,
yeah.
You know, it's like a horse race, and you don't know much about the horses. And the ones with the prettiest, I don't know what they call those things that go under the saddle, the prettiest colors, and the non-horse people, the women come in, and they win 7 out of 10 races, and the expert wins nothing. Mm. That's how I've looked at this tournament. Right from the beginning, though, we all agreed, and I, you know, if you took a poll of coaches that have been in the tournament, you know, North Carolina, by far and away, has the deepest and most talented team, and they have the most ways of beating you. And the only weakness they may have is really not a dependence at all on three-point shooting. North Carolina, Oregon matchup, I think it could be a 92-90 game. It could be a last possession deal. Both teams can score. I don't think either team can stop the other. And in Carolina, it's like, who do you stop? They get most of their points off offensive rebounding. Mm-hmm. Roy Williams will gamble and send three guys to the offensive boards whenever possible, daring you to run. But hello, Oregon loves to run. So if they go to the offensive boards with three and don't come up with it, Oregon's going to have a lot of two-on-one, one-on-zero fast breaks because of Carolina's gambling on that area. But that is a great matchup, and I think has the potential to be an exciting matchup in it. And the other game, it's like, who's going to be the nervous team?
Yeah.
Is it going to be South Carolina, who has had all this time? And, you know, listening to the entire nation sing their praises. And then there's a little trepidation. And the comments made after yesterday's shoot-around were like the kids were focused more on the building, the big stadium, the first time they've ever played in one, where teams like North Carolina and Oregon have played in the dome. So they're used to it. They don't even think about that. And I doubt if it will affect their three-point shooting. Where it may in the other game. But I do feel we're going to see a great first game with Gonzaga in South Carolina, more in the 60s,
yeah,
maybe 70s. But if Sundarius Thornwell keeps on doing what he's doing, you know, close to 27 points per game and really hot from three-point land, you know, South Carolina, they just have that defense. They've got the will. The coach has a team that believes in him. They play with his spirit. And no team in this tournament plays harder than Frank Martin's team.
Tom Penders, Hall of Fame coach with us, Hail Varsity Radio, is at Tom Penders on Twitter. Coach, I wanted to spend a couple of minutes longer on Dana Altman. Coach Altman came on with us earlier this week. He is from down the road. What's your relationship like, not just going against him, but do you know Dana much?
Yes, we were with the same shoe company for 4 or 5 years back, I believe, when I was in Rhode Island and Texas. And I can't even remember whether he was at Creighton yet. I first met him when he was at Moberly Junior College.
Really?
Yes. And he spoke on, like, different things at the coaches' clinics. You know, back in the 80s, 90s, coaches shared a lot. You know, we gave clinics. The NABC, our association, they don't do the clinics they used to, but Dana was on the clinic speech deal with me for a year or two, and I got a chance to listen to him. And I think he's modernized his approach. You know, he was more of a half-court coach at Creighton because, you know, he didn't get the super athletes, you know, the first-round draft pick type guys. But he made good players great and average players good on a consistent basis there. His defenses were always solid. I only coached against him once, and it was out in Hawaii when he had a very good Creighton team, and I was in my first or second year at Houston. They got the better of us, and I just found you had to prepare for so much when you prepared for Dana because he runs great stuff. And now he's doing stuff that some of the better pro teams are doing. They go with the hot-handed guy. You know, when Brooks or one of the other guys gets hot, they're going to keep going to him, you know, over and over until they start missing. Then they go to Tyler Dorsey, and then they'll go inside for a few possessions. I watched the Rhode Island game with great interest because yes. I felt it was going to be one of the best games in the tournament, and it was. But I was amazed at how they were able to do that throughout the game. I just think Dana is also an understated guy himself. You know, he's a very, very low-key guy. He never toots his own horn. He's a coach. He'll get the most out of his talent. And I don't think anybody can ask more of a coach than to get the most out of his talent. And the players that play for him after they're finished, they all feel like they're smarter. They're better prepared for life, all the things that you can ask of a coach, and he wins on top of it. Yeah, he is a treasure for Nebraska.
Tom Penders with us. Coach, I want to get your thoughts here. Nebraska has had some transfers. That's not new news in the world of college basketball. A prized recruit that was a kind of an enforcer, really tough player, a great kid, and Ed Morrow is out of Simeon. He chose to transfer from Nebraska on Wednesday, and it's, you know, the hits kind of keep on coming for Coach Miles. What type of player Nebraska can realistically target? What should the target be? How would you recruit Nebraska?
To win at Nebraska, I said you have to have a style that's different. You know, if you want to play the half-court game, you got to win because the fans get really antsy. But how are you going to get those recruits? How are you going to get guys that maybe Duke was thinking about or was on Duke's list? Well, first of all, that's unrealistic until you win. You've got to go get junior college kids unless your state or near surrounding areas provides a lot of talent and you're going to find one or two kids who want to stay home out of that. everybody today seems bent on going away and then transferring back. And you can do very well with kids you recruit. You don't quite get. They go off, they're unhappy, and they go to a place they know they can play on a second stop. So recruiting doesn't stop after a kid goes to another school. It's how you leave that, you know, that courtship, so to speak. And I had great success with that at Texas. Guys who left the state, nobody was staying in the state of Texas back in 1988, 89. Everybody was leaving for greener pastures. And what we decided to do was go out and recruit them. And if they're not happy, all of a sudden a B.J. Tyler comes back, ends up being a first-round NBA draft pick and leading us to our best seasons at Texas. Rich McIver from Michigan, when the Fab Five came in, you know, he was going into his sophomore year. He didn't play much. He came back home. He ends up starting on arguably my best Texas team, and I think he's still playing professionally overseas.
Wow.
So that's how I would go about it. But style of play, I really think you got to have a guy. Look what Chris Collins did at Northwestern. He didn't hold the ball. He didn't run that crazy Princeton offense with a 30-second clock, which is nuts to even try it. And I think poor John Thompson III got stuck with that. When they put the shot clocks in, it made that offense almost obsolete. So, and I know that Bill Carmody tried to run that. And certain kids want to play that. But those aren't the kind of kids that are going to compete to get those NCAA bids. Just look what Chris did at Northwestern. It's not like he went out and got top 25 recruits.
No, he went motion offense.
Yes, and they opened things up a little bit. A great belief in the three-point shot, running a little pro stuff. I'm sure his dad's helped him with some of those things. You know, Mike Krzyzewski has coached a pro offense since he started coaching internationally. And he had Mike D'Antoni as his offensive coach. So, and that's what Dana Altman has become. He gives players space to do what they can do. He lets his better players have the freedom. The role players know what they're supposed to do. Everybody accepts and buys in. Recruiting is an endless process in today's world. And, So what good is it to have a top 25 recruiting class if you don't get NCAA bids out of it? People pay too much attention to recruiting in today's day and age. That comes from football because they only play 12 games a year and, you know, they got to stay in the news. Basketball, it's a lot of baloney. It's rare when a top 50 kid does what you think he's going to do at the college level. It's usually the other way around. It takes time. Most of the time, unless you're getting the very elite. It happened with Mike Krzyzewski's team a couple of years back, but last year they suffered for it. They lost early in the tournament. This year they're still suffering from it. The one-and-dones, there's a penalty for, unless you're getting all the best ones every year, like John Calipari has been able to do. I wouldn't want to coach that way, and if you look closely at Calipari and check his gray hairs out, you can see what it is to coach a bunch of freshmen at Kentucky. You can't win unless you win it all.
Tom Pender's with us. Coach, enjoy this weekend, and we'll touch base soon. Always love chatting with you during the Final Four.
Thanks for not asking me to pick a winner out of this crew.
I'll wait and ask you Monday.
The only one who has to explain if he goes home without it is Roy Williams.
Amen. Coach, take care.
All right, Chris.
Coach, down to the Final Four, Tom Penders. Good to hear from him. His thoughts on Nebraska. Got to have style. Got to go JUCO. And some advice there and his time with Dana. First time I met him at Moberly. Husker baseball in action against Indiana. Ben Miller, first baseman, next on Hail Varsity.
Former Blackshirt Jay Moore.
That thing is big, Jay. That thing looks hurt, Jay. Oh, man, pull back up, Jay. Jay, we could get some big money for that.
Now, back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
Back at it, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Husker baseball off to Indiana. Senior first baseman Ben Miller with us. And, Ben, thanks for a few minutes. How you doing?
I'm pretty good. How about yourself?
I'm all right. I'm ready for a little break in the weather here. I'm ready for spring to actually be spring. How about you?
Yeah, that'd be nice.
we're away this weekend, but hopefully for next week it'll be nice.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the win against Kansas State. You had a tremendous day at the plate, and guys have won three straight. Momentum right now, is it as good as it's been as you head off to conference play?
I think for this season, yes, definitely. We've been playing some pretty good ball. All three parts of the game, pitching, hitting, and fielding, have been coming together pretty well. Early in the season, we'd have two and then not the other. So seeing all those kind of come together is a glimpse of hope for the team. But, I mean, by no means are we complacent. We want to keep getting better. But I think we definitely have some momentum and playing some good baseball going into Big Ten play, which is good.
What are your thoughts when it comes to those three components, pitching, hitting, fielding? Your theory, you're an elder statesman on the team. Why do you think it wasn't as consistent earlier in the year?
I mean, each of those can come or go. I guess hitting, definitely. I mean, sometimes you can be hitting the ball, sometimes not. It's tough. And pitching, same thing. I mean, it's got to pound the zone. And sometimes other teams will hit, and sometimes they won't. So you got to control what you can control, which is throwing strikes on the mound and then fielding. I think we've been pretty good this year doing that. That's definitely something we can control and we take a lot of pride in. So I think that's gone pretty well, and we got to make sure that keeps going well to get where we want to go.
How's Coach Erstad been in the clubhouse? I mean, you're 23 games in, you're three games over 500 now. As always, you guys are super aggressive, non-conference playing, kind of the best of the best in some out-of-state tournaments. What's his message been? Has he been his usual self, obviously driven and focused, but also kind of a calming voice too?
Yeah, I don't think he's changed much throughout the year. Obviously, we're not where we want to be right now, but like you said, we've played some good teams. I think that'll benefit us in the long run. And Coach Erstad is definitely not pressing or anything. He knows he's got to play our baseball, and things will work out. And I mean, yeah, he's definitely a calming voice around the clubhouse. But I think all the players do understand that we're not in a panic situation quite yet. But we definitely need to play good baseball if we want to do what we can.
Ben Miller with us on Hale Varsity Radio. Husker baseball off to Indiana. Ben, what's your role on the team off the field? I mean, how do you see yourself? How do peers see you?
I mean, off the field, I guess I don't do a ton. I wouldn't call myself like a real vocal leader or calling team meetings or anything too often, but definitely think I'm a lead by example kind of guy on the field. So when I'm on the field and in the weight room and in school and everything, try to do the best I can and put as much effort in that I possibly can. And I think a lot of the younger guys see that, and that'll help them kind of make the transition from high school to college. And but yeah, like I said, I'm not the kind of yelling kind of guy, but more of a lead by example in classroom and on the field and everything.
Tell me your story, how you came from Iowa to Lincoln.
I guess just I kind of came here for a winter camp, and did pretty well at that. Got invited back for like a little tour of the campus and everything, and another camp, and the rest was history, I guess. Just visiting this place and seeing the facilities and everything, it was too good to turn down, and I'm really happy with the coach has given me the shot here and my decision to come here, because I haven't looked back. It's been an awesome experience so far.
When you came out of high school, you know, a top 50 lefty in the nation, number four in the state of Iowa, obviously your offensive numbers impressive as well. And was it a struggle for you, or was it kind of clear cut when you came in that first primary, you're going to be an offensive guy, DH first base, but also we'll let you spend some time on the mound too because you're talented at that. Was that a struggle for you? Did you like offense better than pitching, or where are you at with it?
I guess coming in, I was kind of more of a pitcher, I would say, than a fielder, but that first year they gave me a chance in the fall to do both, and things worked out to the way that I was hitting a little more than pitching, and I mean, whatever I can do to get on the field is good, because I know there's a lot of people that
I would love to get this opportunity, and kind of grateful for everything I got. But it's kind of tough pitching and hitting, having to do the bullpens, but also staying late to hit and everything. Takes its toll on your body, but I think I've done a pretty good job at handling that. And here we are, still kind of doing both 4 years later.
Have you felt pretty good? I mean, from a strength and conditioning standpoint, I know you put the time in, but baseball is such a grind, not only physically, but the mental part of the game. Do you feel all right as you head into conference play?
Oh, yeah. We got a great training staff and weight staff that take care of our bodies. So physically, I feel great. I think most of the guys on the team do as well. And this year, definitely, we've focused a lot more on the mental side of the game, too, to understand that and respect the game, and you'll get respected back. And I know, like you said, baseball is a huge mental game, and Coach Rist knows a lot about that and taught us what he knew, and it's helped a lot of guys out staying grounded and kind of performing at their best.
Ben Miller, a couple more minutes with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Can you kind of explain what you mean by respect the game? I mean, I hear that a ton in baseball. I think I know, but just for our listeners, what's that mean to you?
Well, for a non-baseball player, I guess it could be difficult to understand, but it's kind of like baseball is kind of like a person by itself, I guess I kind of think about it. And because baseball is a tough game, and you can be swinging the bat well but still not getting hits, or throwing strikes and still get hit around. And, I mean, the harder you try sometimes in baseball, the worse you're playing. So it's kind of one of those games where the game kind of has a mind of its own. And I guess my view of it is, if you treat it well and you put in the work and do everything the right way on the baseball field, that the game will reward you and give you that hit when you're not feeling good or allow you to do something that it's kind of like a superstition thing, but I believe in it, and I think a lot of guys do, and it's gotten a lot of our teammates this far, and kind of just riding with it.
So just put in the work, good things will happen, pretty much.
Yeah.
What are you superstitious? Do you have any?
No, nothing too crazy, I don't think. Not many guys on our team do, but I mean, obviously we kind of get into a routine and do the same thing, so there's nothing out of the ordinary that anyone does, I don't believe.
There's no Joe Boo in the locker room?
No, that's for sure.
Ben Miller with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Ben, you came back for your senior season. You had a chance to go to Major League Baseball. Pittsburgh was... took a draft position with you, 32nd round, and was that a tough call for you? I mean, it's a dream, I'd assume, to get to the opportunity to play Major League Baseball, but you wanted to come back for your senior season. How'd you process that decision?
I mean, it was really cool getting drafted, and like you said, it's always been a dream of mine to go play at the next level. But for the point I was at in my baseball career and academically trying to get as close to my degree as I can. Baseball here at Nebraska was definitely my best option. I guess when I got my name called, I was already pretty certain that I was coming back, so it wasn't a very, very tough decision for me. I'm happy with my decision and really excited for the rest of the season to play out.
Your approach at the plate, take me through it as you've kind of grown and matured. When you get up to the dish, what obviously you're looking to get on base, doesn't matter how.
Mm-hmm.
But from a situational standpoint, are you better the older you are now with count and kind of going with the pitch versus trying to be power every pitch? I mean, kind of take me through your personality at the plate.
I definitely think I've learned some as the years regarding like what pitches I'm going to get in certain counts, but. I think it's kind of like a double-headed snake. Like, the longer you're here, and the more you think about hitting, sometimes that's bad for you. And sometimes the best hitters kind of just go up there and see the ball and hit the ball. And that's kind of how I came in and had some successes. So I've kind of stuck with that. I don't try to think about too much when I'm up there. But like you said, getting on base is all that matters. So doing whatever it takes to get on base and get in scoring position for someone to knock me in is pretty much the goal. And I'm kind of a guy that just goes up there, try to clear my mind, and go to a happy place right before I go up there, and just do what I can do.
What's your happy place?
I mean, I have, because I go to a few places, but I mean, they involve being back home and being with my family, and family's really close at home with me, so I like being there. And coming to Lincoln, but it was an awesome experience, and I guess that'd be where I go most often.
So is it as simple as a vision in your mind? You're around the family dinner table, you're on the couch watching a ball game. Am I describing the potential happy place well?
Oh, yeah. I don't get too crazy with it, but yeah, I think you got a good idea there.
There we go. Ben Miller with us, Hale Varsity Radio. Ben, best of luck to you guys this weekend. Thanks for giving us a few minutes.
Thank you very much.
Huskers, BTN, they get rock, and we talked to Ben yesterday, and 6 o'clock is when Nebraska and Indiana get rocking on BTN for Husker baseball. So Ben Miller, he says happy place, and I'm sorry. I think of Happy Gilmore. That's it. I think of the little dude riding the tricycle, the gal from Modern Family in her outfit, And grandma winning at blackjack. That's what I think of when I hear "go to your happy place." And if you're a pitcher, the happy place isn't hanging a curve over the dish to Ben Miller, where he can park one. Good stuff from Ben Miller. Big time talent, senior, and he'll get rocking with Nebraska. You hope, if you're a Nebraska baseball fan, this series and beyond. $1.06 right now if you missed any of the premium content with HaleVarsity.com. That's practice updates. That's basketball reviews. That's inside information. That's message board activity. We'll give you a subscription now, 6-month subscription now. $1.06 right now, 466-3776.
Forget to catch any segment of the show?
Man, you are one pathetic loser.
Find the podcast of the show on HaleVarsity.com or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
All right, all right, all right.
Now, back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
Well, when it warms up a bit, get yourself to Wilderness Ridge Golf, wildernessridgegolf.com, where you can log on and visit Wilderness Ridge today. Membership benefits, membership pricing, and professionals that will help you improve your game. Chris Thompson, and of course, our dear friend Mike Shuhart. Shuey's on his way to Mexico with Nebraska Golf. El Tigre is the name of the course that they are competing at. There's a live tiger that rides in a golf cart. As he put it, either I'm the most gullible man in America, or Shuey's just that tough. I think Shuey's that tough. Well, there's no Tigers in the Final Four. There's the Bulldogs, the Gamecocks, the Ducks, and the Tar Heels. Let's figure out who's going to go to the national championship game. The Friday forecast, Klausburn and Brandon Vogel of HaleVarsity.com magazine with us. And the Friday forecast brought to you by your friends at the Gamblers Assistance Program, the Nebraska Council on Compulsive Gambling and Choices Treatment Center. If you or somebody you love has a problem with gambling, call the statewide helpline, 1-800-522-4700. All right, the forecast alive and well. Vogues, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Doing okay. Klausburn, how you hanging?
Well, it's a very happy time of year, Christopher. As you know, April is one of the best sports months of the year. You get the Final Four and the Masters and opening day and the start of the NBA and NHL playoffs. And, of course, the weather is warm, so that means you can go fishing instead of helping set up for Nancy's Ladies Aid meeting. So I'm really excited for the calendar to turn.
I bet you are. All right. Let's start off the first game Saturday night, South Carolina, Gonzaga, Zags -7. And, you know, Coach Pender's made an interesting point earlier this hour. You've got two teams that are probably a little nervous about shooting in a venue like Glendale. Oregon and Carolina have been to situations like that, more so Carolina, but Oregon's, you know, an Elite Eight team, too. Vogue, start us off here. Does the Frank Martin love fest continue, or does Mark Few and Gonzaga continue to make history?
Yeah, I might play that familiarity angle a little bit here with this one. I think Gonzaga gets it done here. It'll be just under the number. Maybe they haven't played in a football stadium before, which is a ridiculous notion that we need to stop. But that's a separate topic. Mm-hmm. I'll take Gonzaga 71-65.
Okay. TJ, what do you think?
Yeah, both these teams are really good defensively. South Carolina, a scrappy bunch, but the best defensive team left is Gonzaga. This is going to be a low-scoring one. Gonzaga, 66. South Carolina, 60.
I'm going to go against Gonzaga because I need South Carolina to get me out of getting TJ a steak and a beer. That's my only motivation here. Frank Martin, kind of a rehab facelift type story here. Thought of as ultra intense at Kansas State. That's echoed at South Carolina. And he's flipped it around. He's won enough on this stage for people to listen to him and see what he's about versus what they see on the sideline. He's been able to change people's mind, and he's continued to prove how good a coach he is with what he did at K-State and now at South Carolina. He preaches attitude. Their attitude continues as South Carolina finds a way. Why bet against him now? Give me South Carolina 67, Gonzaga 62, a 5-point win as Francisco is on to the national title game. Klausburn, what do you think?
Well, I have to say I'm very proud of South Carolina. They've really stood tall, and they've made a long, hard, and deep run through this tournament. And they haven't let anything go to their heads, blood or otherwise. But then again, Gonzaga is my favorite Muppet. So I'm going to go with the Bulldogs in this one, and I hope TJ drinks something better than Busch Light.
Oh, I think he'll make me pay for it. What would you order?
A Blue Moon.
Okay, well done. No zip line?
Yeah. That's all right.
I remember my first beer, too. It's okay, TJ.
That's fine.
He's having one now, Klausburn. Okay, Oregon, Carolina, Dana, the pride of Wilbur. Man, I'm going to go with my heart on this one. Oregon's just too good, too balanced, too athletic. I know Carolina's nuts, but it's going to be the Oregon tempo and fast break that counters Carolina's love of crashing the boards on the offensive glass. And everyone, the place for Oregon, center and all, better than your average ball handler. Give me a high score. Give me Oregon 90. Give me Carolina 85. Give me the Ducks on to the national championship. TJ.
Yeah, who will prevail? Oregon's small ball with Bell manning the middle, or the big boys of UNC, the Blue Bloods, and their number one best in rebounding in the NCAA? I think the Boucher injury will finally catch up to them against North Carolina's talent. I like UNC 79, Oregon 75, setting up the David versus Goliath Gonzaga UNC matchup.
Ah, okay. Vogues, what do you think here? Are you Team Dana here or Roy?
As someone who grew up in one of the two westernmost time zones, I'm going to go with Oregon simply to end the recent streak of West Coast teams. Well, we've already ended it in them not making the Final Four. This would be the third time, I think, that two teams west of the Mississippi have played for the title since tournament expanded. So give me Oregon close, 76-75.
Klausburn, Ducks or Tar Heels? What are you thinking?
Well, I've got to admit that I really don't think about Ducks that often, unless, of course, my phone auto-corrects a very angry text. But I suppose if I'm going to be a good Nebraskan, I better root for Dana, right? We always root for our own.
You're supposed to.
I mean, I'm convinced that there could be a new reality show that comes out about who can kick the most puppies.
And as long as there was someone from Hyannis on that show, Nebraskans would have someone to root for. So I'm going to go with Dana in this one, and I'm going to pick the upset pick. I think Oregon wins this one in a very tight game, 70-68, and they do it with a last-second three.
Okay. That'd be fair turnabout. We won't talk again, so we're going to do a little bonus coverage here. One team, one winner. Who wins the title? Monday. Vogues, one word, who?
Gonzaga.
All right. Teach.
I picked them. The Zags.
Give me Oregon. 30 seconds, Klausburn. Who wins it?
Well, I did suppose I picked my favorite Muppet versus Nebraska's favorite son. And it puts me in a really awkward position, but once again, I'll go with Dana Altman and the Ducks, and I'm loath to think that I agree on a sports thing with Christopher.
Klausburn, we love you. You have a good weekend.
Okay.
Vogue, you be good, buddy. Thanks for the time. We'll talk tomorrow morning.
Thanks, guys.
All right, there we are. We'll wind down a Friday on Hail Varsity.
Subscribe to Hail Varsity Magazine. Call 1-855-3-HUSKER or go to HailVarsity.com/subscribe.
That's amazing! That's amazing! That's amazing! That's amazing!
Now, back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
Dan's tweeting in. What? My mind wanders. What did Klausburn say about Hyannis? That wasn't nice, was it? About a documentary. I got to go back and listen. Do you recall?
I don't.
I mean, it was some sort of rude, crude documentary. Klausburn loves everybody. If you're offended by him, just please move on from being offended. I'm going to tell you how to feel.
Yeah.
He likes to needle everybody.
He does.
He calls me Christopher, for God's sake. It's like I'm in trouble and it's eighth grade all over again. All right. Tomorrow morning, the weekend edition of Hail Varsity. Myself, Mark Kranak, will get rolling. Busy one today, though. Big thanks to Tom Penders and Ben Miller this hour. And thanks to Bill Dolman last hour. We spent lots of time on spring football. There'll be a scrimmage tomorrow. Not the scrimmage, but likely a scrimmage tomorrow. So excited about that. Ben Miller, Nebraska against Iowa. So some Husker baseball coverage. Tom Penders, a Hall of Fame basketball coach that's been to the NCAA tournament multiple times with multiple teams and Elite Eight. So his thoughts on the Final Four. I got a question for you with this run South Carolina's been on. Does Frank Martin stay in South Carolina? I mean, is he there next year? Yeah. Is he there in 2 years? Yeah. So, yeah, I know Terry Keneally can smoke people. Thanks, Dan. We'll get Keneally and Klausburn matched up. We can all bet on Terry. So, if you're Frank Martin, listen, you have the world in your hands.
I feel like people would come calling.
No, they will. But do you leave South Carolina? You know why? Because short of your verbal tirade 2 years ago, they've backed you. They hired you away from Kansas State.
Yeah.
They put you in a better spot, recruiting area, closer to Miami, your native town. You're in the SEC.
Yeah, and if you go to a bigger program, there's going to be more cameras on you.
Sure. I'm just saying that his way or the highway works where he's at. And
yeah.
He can go get a kid at South Carolina that he can control in a good way, in his way of yelling, screaming, tough love, old school style coaching.
And South Carolina is still close enough to all the connections he has down in Florida.
Plus, there's just talent around the Carolinas. I mean, not every kid can go to Duke of Carolina. And you can, the SEC's, you can play against Kentucky to be seen. So, and now you're further than Kentucky. And your job is to beat Florida, which you did. So if I'm Frank, I get a bump and I stay where I'm at. Because South Carolina football's I mean, they've had some top 10 finishes quite a bit the last few years.
Mm-hmm.
But they're in transition. Bad last year with Spurrier. Really bad rocky first couple with Muschamp. And basketball is it right now. I mean, yeah, baseball, too. It's always awesome in South Carolina. So, hey, it isn't going to be greener, and you're going to get paid. It comes down to prestige. Talk to you tomorrow for the weekend edition. Thanks for tuning in to Hail Varsity. Have a good weekend.